Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, presenting Wetland Coffee Breaks to connect wetland lovers with news and discussion. Live and pre-recorded sessions can be found at wisconsinwetlands.org.
Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
This is the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland. The Madison Symphony will be performing three works of Beethoven triple program, actually, coming up this weekend, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at the Overture Center in Madison. The three Beethoven works on the program, his Lenore number 3, it's almost like we have some numerological thing going on here, the Symphony number 2 in D, and then the centerpiece, the Beethoven Triple Concerto. It's a concerto for violin, cello, and piano, and we're happy to have all three of the soloists here. They are Gil Shaham, the violinist, Orly Shaham, the pianist, and the cellist is also with us, and that's Sterling Elliott. Welcome, one and all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be with you.
Well, Sterling, let's start with you. And Beethoven did not write all that many works for solo cello. He has, I think, 5 sonatas,
right.
Some of which he wrote early, and one, I think, right before this concerto. How do those all compare? Because the concerto, the triple concerto, has the reputation of being a kind of a handful for a cellist.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, especially, it's wonderful to have those 5 sonatas. It really encompasses his whole life, sort of trajectory in the sonatas. And but I think it doesn't even come close to comparing to the depth and the trajectory that he has instilled within this work for the cello part in the triple concerto. It's just so reaching far beyond the limitations of anything he seemed to previously think possible for cello throughout not just those sonatas, but any of his chamber works. He really seemed to be striving and reaching for something that was beyond anything that had been at the time, and he certainly achieved it.
It's not a work, I'm guessing, that you get to play very often, because one thing to say, yes, I can play, you know, with an orchestra, I can play a cello concerto, whatever it may be, but to get all three soloists there, it's a little bit more logistically complicated. How many chances have you had to play this?
You're right. Well, we had our first rehearsal yesterday, and Friday will be my first time playing it.
Well, okay, that's a landmark right there. And so, Gil and Orly, how have you approached this then? Have you played this before together ever?
We've never done it with each other before, actually, although I think over the years we've probably both played it dozens of times. But it's funny, I was thinking about it when we were first rehearsing, is that, you know, I know Gil so well, pretty much everything he's doing is what I would have hoped, right?
How fortunate. Sort
of, you know, it's some of the, I mean, I've played it with some wonderful people, but the, you know, his approach is so clean and so thoughtful to Beethoven's. We have done a lot of Beethoven sonatas, even from our childhood together. And so coming back to this feels very much like home.
So not too much discussion necessary when you settle down to rehearse this.
Well, we did have an exhaustive rehearsal in New York before we came to Madison.
How did that work? Just the three of you playing it as a piano trio or something? Or
and yeah, just yeah. sort of the, exactly, just the three of us and sort of a little bit improvising the tutis and maybe humming or singing along. And it feels really, really fun. I think Beethoven's triple, which is really a home run, you know, it's one of the
good call.
It's
there.
One of the great, great masterpieces, you know, and I think we all share this love for this masterwork. It's just so tremendous, you know. It's one of the great symphonic masterpieces.
There's never any temptation for I'll just make it a little bit more exciting than the cello or the piano or vice versa.
It's plenty exciting. We were discussing how, you know, Sterling was saying, you know, he's going past the limitations of the cello. He really, this piece is not comfortable for any of the instruments. He wasn't thinking about that. He had this vision of what he wanted it to sound like, and he just puts it. And so literally no one of the parts actually feels really great in the hands, but they work so beautifully together. And one of the things that always strikes me about this piece is, you know, anytime you have chamber music, it's always this question of how are the communications going? You know, which instruments are communicating at the moment? Who is sort of left out? Do they join in? How do those dynamics work? And in this case, there are times when the orchestra becomes the fourth chamber musician. But there are also times when he takes the piano part and turns it into two instruments so that, you know, my right hand is, you know, riffing with Gil on something and my left hand is talking back and forth in dialogue with Sterling. And it's such brilliant writing. You're never static.
Yeah, there are times the violin and cello play as if they're a piano, you know, and yes. The cello plays sort of a left-hand figure, the violin plays right-hand figure. Then there are other times, like in the slow movement, where the cello and violin are sort of singing a duet with the pianist playing triplets. And so, it really is, it's really like an incredible drama that unfolds.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But who gets the first word and who gets the last word?
First word is cello.
Definitely yes, cello for and that first
the,
word.
And all the movements, actually. The solo lines always begin with the cello in the first, the gorgeous slow movement, and even the finale, yeah.
Well, okay, we'll be listening for that. And word has leaked out from a rehearsal that the soloists are stellar in this.
two are.
Well, okay, let's find about it. As long as we were talking about the number two here, you both, Gil and Orly, have done a couple of brother-sister CDs over the years, right? And we have at hand in particular, a couple of them, but this one with Dvorak, and it features, this goes back a while. We got it in 1997, thanks to a contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio during a member drive. That's all.
That's very cool. But I don't know how that's possible, given that, you know, we're still in our late 20s.
That's the magic of radio. And so we have, I think the finale from the violin sonata in F. Any comments going into this, or shall we wait for comments going out?
We just love this piece. You know, I remember when we discovered it before the recording, it's not played all that often. We were just enjoying every second of sort of sight reading in the room together, and such joy in Dvorak's writing.
Here we go. Thank you. Well, that was fun to listen to, and it sounded as if you had fun playing it, too.
Such a great composer. Such a great masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I have to ask a question about what I'll call very broadly science and music, and that would be, this is one for you, Sterling, the science of changing a transmission in a car. That's one of your things, and how does that relate, if at all, to music?
I should know, as my transmission lies on the floor of my car now. It's just something before I'd say like my love of music drew me to the career I have now, I had a very strong love for engineering always growing up. And it's actually been quite difficult for me to pin down how the two have related over the years, but I've actually recently kind of realized that it's this sort of diagnostic approach to the both of them, both music and cars, and like the blood, sweat, and tears that's sort of required for both of them, and the amount of dedication and struggle, and especially for cars, if anyone's, you know, changed a simple car, especially I'm sure here in Wisconsin, you know that with one rusty bolt, the simplest job can become so laborious. And so I think there's something about that certainly relates to both music and cars. Yeah.
On the other hand, I would imagine certain listeners to your music would be a little concerned about those hands that really... Sterling belong to the world now, you know, being tucked up in there among bolts and sharp things and heavy things. Anybody ever question you about that?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, they would be happy to know that living in New York City, my hobby of building cars has been on the back burner for some years.
Well, yeah, what good is the car in New York City?
Exactly.
Yeah, less all the time by the sound of it. We have some more Dvorak here, and these are these lovely four romantic pieces that Gil and Orly Shaham recorded long ago. And what about the first of them? Do you have a thought about that, either of you?
Just little gems, you know, little miniatures that set, like poetry, set a scene and kind of take you into their world. Beautiful interactions between the two instruments, with the piano supporting this very cantabile violin line.
Thank you.
piano and violin, the pianist being Orly Shaham and the violinist Gil Shaham, and my guest today also with cellist Sterling Elliott. They're all in Wisconsin to perform the Beethoven Triple Concerto with the Madison Symphony this weekend, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. And what else is in the air for the three of you as, you know, independent traveling soloists?
Well, I guess this is the first concert coming out of winter break for me, which is exciting to be back on the road for the next few months doing some concertos. I believe after this I'm going off to Reno for a Saint-Saëns concerto, and after that off to Columbus for my first and only commission of John Corigliano's Phantasmagoria for cello and orchestra. So,
oh, congratulations.
Exciting things coming up. Yeah.
Cool. Gil?
And also coming off winter break.
It sounds like you're both in college. Is that
right? That's a nice feeling. I like that.
Right, we'll
like
go with it.
I guess the next couple of dates I'll go to Palm Beach Symphony and Cincinnati Symphony and play concertos there. There's a new recording coming out, very, very excited about, with Maestro Leon Botstein and the Tone Orchestra, the orchestra now of three pieces that I was really, really extremely honored to premiere. Three concertos by Scott Wheeler and Avner Dorman and Bright Cheng.
Oh, and, Bright Cheng.
And it's really thanks to Maestro Botstein that we were able to record up at Bard College with the fantastic Tone Orchestra. So that should be coming out soon.
The new pieces keep coming. And how about for you, Orly?
Yeah, very cool. Next week, I am slated to go to L.A., actually, and play at UCLA, assuming they're back in their homes.
And good luck with that.
Continuing my series in Southern California with the Pacific Symphony, where we're doing a couple of premieres on the program, which I'm very excited about. We've been commissioning American composers and premiering a lot of American music over my time there. And we're actually, when I was there in the fall, we recorded a whole bunch of those pieces. So I'm hoping that's going to come out maybe in the late summer. And actually this spring, looking very much forward to the first tour, recital tour that Gil and I are going to be doing for the first time in quite a few years as we raised our families. It was.
And we'll play here in Madison.
Oh, are you?
We will be here in early April.
Yeah.
So we'll be looking, and you'll be back soon then.
Yep, yeah, very excited.
Looking forward to that. And now one more from the brother and sister team. And I assume you have always gotten along really well.
Especially at our instruments, I would say.
I was thinking just before when we were talking about Beethoven, like my very first and only memory of our parents playing. Our parents were both scientists, but I do have one memory of them playing. And, you know, my mom sat down at the piano and my dad pulled his violin out from the back of the den and they took out the minuet movement from a Beethoven sonata, and they played it together. And as a young kid, that just made such an impression. Yeah, that could be the reason that I started music lessons at all, you know, just seeing that, and somehow it just felt special to me. You know, there's something about
a
that
magic
that
moment,
like, and so there's something about Beethoven. I don't know.
Well, there is, isn't there? What about you, Orly?
You know, I didn't remember that I'm a little bit younger. I didn't see that, but for me the playing around with making music together with Gil when we were kids, I mean, that's the most wonderful moments of my childhood. You know, we would start our practices in separate rooms as we were supposed to, and like 90% of the time by the end of that practice period we had somehow converged around the piano.
Oh, great.
And we were either sight reading sonatas together or
Dvorak
and some Prokofiev. Yeah, and sometimes we would sight read difficult Prokofiev pieces where one of us would sight read just piano pieces, one of us would be reading the right hand and the other would be reading the left.
Wow, what great fun, though. Speaking of Prokofiev, this is a famous one, a transcription, too, by Yasha Heifetz. And it is the famous March from the Love for Three Oranges, as you recorded somewhat more recently. I have 2004 on this, so here we go. Prokofiev's Love for Three Oranges, played by two of my three guests for the midday today, Gil and Orly Shaham, and with us also the dazzling young cellist, you're all young, music makes you young, cellist Sterling Elliott, and they're all performing the Beethoven Triple Concerto this weekend with the Madison Symphony, a rare opportunity to see that work, which you just don't find that often in concert. A pleasure. Pleasure also to have Oliver with us, Oliver the dog there being very quiet, so thanks for bringing him along too. And now, right after this, we come to our quiz question here on WPR.